Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, baby, make it hot. Buy the cop, so you hit the spot. Come on, baby, make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee.
And welcome to a new moon edition of Naked Summer Radio.
Mm-hmm. Here we
are. I am somewhat present.
Oh, hold on a second.
Holy cow, what the hell was that?
What happened? Dog got hurt. Oh, sure. What happened? Oh.
All right. We were in the first minute of the show, and an animal has been hurt.
I don't know. He got caught under the... Come here, Jasper. Come here. Come to Mommy. Come here.
Jasper, the Onto Interference dog, chiming in again for its 11th consecutive show.
Yeah, every show.
I would like to shoot that thing, to tell you the truth.
Oh, how could you say that about my cute puppy?
So just trust me. I have no friend of the animals.
Well, you be nice to my puppy. He's
especially
okay.
The fat squirrel who was on the rampage the last couple of days in the backyard. Seen carrying several carcasses.
Oh,
I don't know what it's up to. It looks like it's getting ready for its barbecue weekend.
Oh, jeez.
Little squirrel barbecue. Oh, boy. So, anyway, lots of stuff happening. We got a big shoe tonight. We don't know who's going to be here, who's not going to be here. And we are making a big 180 with the shape and direction of the shoe.
Uh-huh.
Having trouble logging on. Oh, that's never happened before.
No.
No, not here on Blog Talk Radio. It always works. Everything works all the time.
Uh-huh.
So we'll be getting that out in the course of the evening. The number again tonight to call in to participate, 646-478-4847. And what are we talking about? Frig we know. We're going to be talking about something a little different, something that kind of expands on what we were talking about last week with the limitations of therapy, which is, you know, well documented. And, that theme last week, you know, from Stephen Hayes' work of basically saying that people suffer and that happiness is not normal, not the most, you know, uplifting messages to walk out the door with, but they're real, and that's really kind of what we're going to be discussing tonight is the limitations of matter.
Yeah, I think Uncle Al had something to say about life and happiness,
really?
Didn't he?
Really? All right, well, get him out of the way.
I don't want to talk to these cocksuckers, but you have to. In life, you have to do a lot of things you don't fucking want to do. Many times... That's what the fuck life is, one vile fucking task after another. But don't get aggravated. Then the enemy has you by the short hair.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
I swear, Jacob. You know, I actually saw a Deadwood episode randomly on HBO last week, and it made me get aggravated that they never made a movie out of that thing.
I know.
Boy.
What a great show.
Between that and... And John from Cincinnati. What's his name? Bastard.
Drawing a blank.
I forget his name. Little mealy mouth guy. Yeah, Milch. Does he have any more contracts with HBO to drive us crazy like that?
I don't know, but you know, I tend to not even want to look at anything that he's got going on because he's going to do the same thing.
Yeah, they seem to they give him a decent concept, and then he develops it for about a week, and then basically, the show gets canceled. And John from Cincinnati was a good show.
Great show. But you know what? It required a brain.
Well, that automatically lets most of HBO's listeners, viewers out. I mean, it's like sometimes I just get depressed.
Actually.
How do you get people to pay attention? I mean, part of the reason why we're doing this show is that we can bring a different approach to a lot of things that people have been banging their heads against the wall into view. And, you know, we talk about weird stuff, like somatics, like what's that? And really what it is, think about going back 30 years ago when there actually used to be a debate where there was a connection between the mind and the body. That used to be something that the drawbridge was up, and you psychologists were on one side of the coin, and all the people doing all the allopathic, you know, stick a fork in you were on the other side of the coin, and there was no relationship between the meat and the gravy.
Amazing.
But this time, we didn't forget the
gravy.
Forget
the gravy.
And so somatics basically puts you in a position where you can have a relationship between you, the organism, and, your environment. So now you don't have to discuss if there's any type of a division or a connection. It's all one thing. And basically what we're going to be talking about tonight is the limits of adaptation as it relates to chiropractic, one of those four-letter words I used to say. And we invited a whole bunch of chiropractors, you know, that may or may not be calling in.
It'll be interesting to see who does show up.
Yeah, I called all the cars, and believe me, my email inbox was burning up the last couple of days with all sorts of excuses and umbrellas going up. We'll see who shows up. And basically what I'll give you guys a little bit of a primer is that way back there in 1927, chiropractic shape by the name of R.W. Stevenson, type of guy, decided he was going to put all the chiropractic philosophy into one textbook, basically because the profession needed to teach people that it had, I would say, sort of a high school education. It was mostly a vocational trade back then. And the selling angle was, is that you had a division of healthcare that most people got their medical care in the cities, and out in the country, you're on your own. So for injuries and for anything that was sort of self-limiting, it wasn't an illness, you pretty much dealt with it on your own. So chiropractic, the marketing angle of it, was we're going to bring a very basic, very simple handicraft, kind of a vocational skill, to the farmers, teach the farmers how to adjust people. So they really didn't care about education in terms of the academic part of it. They cared about giving you a skill to adjust people. So the philosophy was extremely radical at the time. So R.W. Stevenson gets together, he writes this textbook up. Now this is a full 20 years after the legal battles to establish chiropractic as a profession came in. And when Brother George gets here, I'll let him review that for us. Because it was pretty interesting. So, not sure. Oh, who's 360?
I don't know.
I don't know what area code that is. Well, anyway, let me just finish my riff here. So Stevenson writes this book, and in the book he articulates 33 chiropractic principles, right? And we'll go through some of them later, but the one we're going to be focusing on is this principle 24, kind of sneaks through the cracks. And it's, you know, somewhat of a chiropractic kryptonite in a way, because it stops where the chiropractic influences and starts where nature takes over. So it's called the limits of adaptation, and it goes like this. I feel like I'm going to do like Devil Went Down to Georgia. Innate intelligence adapts forces in matter for the body as long as it can do so without breaking a universal law. Sounds a little gothic, hmm?
Uh-huh.
Or innate intelligence is limited by the limitations of matter. That or is going to be the subject of our little discussion tonight, because I want you guys to get clear, because people go for body work. I don't care if you're going for a massage. I don't care if you're going for even for flaky reiki. Anything that involves the physical. And they think that the shape that's doing the work is actually the vessel for the intervention and for the benefit. When actually it comes from other things we're going to talk about here, this interaction of intelligences that we're going to be lacing through. So we're going to get to some things like free will and some other stuff later. But anyway, let's figure out who 360 is. I don't know if it's a caller or a guest. I'll hit it. All right. Name American serial number. Ethel, the checking
hey.
In. All right.
Bob, how
Ethel
are you?
In the house. Wow. Joining us live from the West Coast. Robert Ethel.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is great. All right. So we've definitely got somebody who's
so
going to be
close covered.
Yeah, well, we just wanted someone in the room that had a stance on these issues. And, you know, you're sort of a mild opinion about some of these things, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Actually, I got more questions than I got opinions, but.
Well, all right. Well, we've got the 50 minutes to basically wear out my synapses, so.
Should be fun.
Yeah, I think so. We got people coming from UB that are going to have a little different point of view in a couple of minutes, but And who knows? We might get some surprise guests. Christopher Kent might call in. Who knows? Who knows? It's chiropractic. Come on. We could argue over the time of day. So as I was trying to get through there, that principle gets tucked in there, number 24, out of 1 to 33. And it has that or in it. And the or is really what creates a little bit of a dichotomy. Did I say dichotomy? And this is what, to me, is the crux of a lot of the reasons why people expect the chiropractic to cure or fix and all the other lingo you allopathic shapes bring to my table, when we're really trying to free and trying to support something that's already running you, something that's already giving you your life and your health. But, of course, that got washed out, you know, with all the other things that they told you about your body. Because in somatics, there is no body. You know where the bodies are? They're in the morgue. All right? You're an organism. Ooh, it sounds dirty to say that, but you're an organism, animal variety. And you have an environment, both internal and external, all the way down to the teeny-weeny cells. And you have to have a way to communicate on all these different levels, right? So the chiropractors, us weirdos, you know, way back in the freaking 20s, had to try to figure it out before there was a lot of, like, awareness of things like the quantum and all the other things that go on now. How the heck are we going to communicate to people that they're dealing with something that's alive, not dead, and that it doesn't care what you call it, bufitis, arthritis, whatever it is. They don't care what you name it. It doesn't subscribe to that map. It has a different covenant, a different charter, a different way of organizing itself. So this concept of intelligence, which is the thing that the chiropractors, of course, in the last 30, 40 years, have neatly tucked into the closet, ashamed of it, really, while the psychologists and all the other ologists have trotted it out and thrown up the flagpole every way you can look, chiropractors are running around talking about muscles and meat. This is what we do. You know, in the 20s, we were innovative in the era of our time, and they were locking us in jail, and now we're behaving so we can get reimbursed by insurance companies. This is what chiropractic is at this point. But this principle here is the bridge, Charlie. Oh, where is Charlie, by the way? I need Charlie right now.
Oh, well, let me see if I can find him while you're talking.
I think I see him.
You got it?
Well, not the bridge one, but it's worth it. Let me just lower this down. This is Charlie the Unicorn.
Yeah, Charlie, Candy Mountain. It's a land of sweets and joy and joyness.
Please stop bouncing on.
Yeah, all right. That should play at every chiropractic campus every day.
Yeah, I see.
We have a very weird number calling in here.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but I'm going to click it.
Oh.
Okay, sure. Who's this? Anybody? Who's 111? Anybody?
Bueller.
Yeah, play the Bueller. I don't know. Somebody's calling in with a very weird. I don't know what that is, but I guess they're not there, so I'm just going to put them back on hold. I don't know what that is. So I've never seen that area code before. 1111111111. So as I was saying, this is why I think the chiropractors, contemporary chiropractors that were taught that philosophy, and then they had to go out into practice and actually adapt to an environment that was completely almost invalidating of everything they learned philosophically to practice their trade. And of course, the clients coming in, not aware of either one of these things going on in the background, they just want their ass to feel better or their neck to feel better or whatever's bothering them. So they don't come in with a strategy that's looking at things, you know, from a long view or from a vitalistic standpoint, that things are alive. Not things, you know, not things hurt and things are dying, but things are alive. It's just a strange sort of paradox that most chiropractors are aware of. So anyway, I don't know what this is, but so all of that's the backdrop to kind of get this flushed out, because we talked about the limitations of the talk therapies and the mental health therapies. Now we're dealing with how do you really kind of discuss the physics or the sort of the stuff of healing without understanding the intelligence behind it. So, you know, we have Affolter here, and I don't know who 1111 is, but that, I don't know what that is. Are we going to have enough lines to get people in?
I don't know.
Come to think of it.
Well, we'll have to hang up on things that we don't understand.
Yeah, I'm going to lose 111 just because we can get more callers, and I don't know who that is. So when did you graduate from chiropractic college there, RC?
84.
Okay. And you went to Palmer like me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Palmer, the original?
Yeah, Davenport.
The so-called Fountainhead.
Yeah, the fountainhead. It's a fountainhead, all right. Political fountainhead at this point. Oh, I hope Chris calls in and get this unload on the consortium. I love it. Anything that has research and consortium in it sounds very Soprano-like, and that's been Palmer for about 10 years now. They've been pushing this consortium that they're actually going to be doing quote-unquote chiropractic research, and all they're doing is a bunch of low back studies to prove that if we crank on somebody that we're actually having a benefit on some pieces of their body, which makes no sense. We haven't gotten involved in health education. We haven't gotten involved in anything that has to do with the principles that we're talking about, especially this one, where you could actually sit at a table with the most staunch allopath and they'll understand it. They'll understand the limits of adaptation. You could say, this is what I'm working within. I'm trying to help the person that's on my table move out to those limits rather than work within them. Move out to those boundaries and get the most out of the limitations of matter rather than the least. Because if you understand them, well, lo and behold, you actually get a system that organizes itself. But we don't even try to do that. We basically pretend that's not the goal. The goal is to treat the meat, make sure we get reimbursed, move them through, wave the wellness flag, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, all right, someone else is calling in without a 111, so maybe this is the mystery guest, Christopher Kent. Area code looks like a jersey. Is that you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm on the bat phone.
No, oh, okay. Was that you with the 111 a minute ago? That was
well,
the strangest.
I called you on another number, and it wasn't working right, so I called back on another number. So
well, it worked
this
time.
If you like this one better, you've got it.
All right. Well, no, I don't got any other numbers for you. My God. Well,
I don't know.
Joining us here is
decoder you have, but anyway, I'm here.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. I just freaked me out because I never saw a number like that before. We're joined here with Dr. Christopher Kent from Trip Alliance, and I don't know if you heard the top of the show, but we're trying to get to a discussion of limitations of matter, kind of roundabout way to understand why people would pursue any kind of, you know, even if it's physical therapy, just to throw it out as a broad term. They come in and they have something going on with their physical body, and they think that the modality that they're seeking is almost like the match game PM. If I got a knee problem, I go to this guy. They've learned that model, and chiropractic has a different perspective, looking at the whole organism, looking at the whole person's life, actually, which includes like memory and cognition and all the other fancy things. And this little principle, this limitations of adaptation, is sort of, to me, it's sort of the missing piece of the puzzle to make it so that we can connect to a culture that functions almost in a sort of healthy respect for limitations. They just say, you know, you got to live with that for the rest of your life. You got everything's a life sentence, no matter what it is. And so, just, you know, from your travels, because you travel in a different stratosphere than most of us here. What do you think the world, like not just this culture, but the world thinks of chiropractic from the outside looking in? Do they think of it as, you know, whack-a-bowl, you know, kind of a thing? Do they still think of it that way, like the seven danger signs, or they do perceive it as a discipline that's on the par with, you know, some of the Eastern disciplines and some of the ones that are more functional?
No, what you said is correct. It's clearly the former. Whenever I tell someone that I'm a chiropractor in the real world, they invariably grab their neck or their back and say, oh, I need you. And I thank my lucky stars that I never elected to practice colorectal surgery or specialize in gynecology. I can only imagine what they would grab and claim they needed. But nonetheless, that's the perception. And it's an unfortunate one. And just to touch on some of the things you said earlier, there's a very interesting paper that was published. In fact, I just had the dubious privilege of attempting to address a group of psychiatrists in Canada on chiropractic and mental health, and in reviewing the literature that was available, I was rather shocked to discover the PRISM study. And this is basically a meta-analysis of over 100 randomized controlled trials on so-called spinal manipulation. And of those trials, there were a number that had robust enough designs that they felt it was reasonable to look at a mental health dimension, usually through the SF-36. And the bottom line is that the chiropractic care, or spinal manipulation, to use their terminology, had a more robust effect than any of the talk therapies, with the exception of cognitive behavioral therapy, which just had a little bit. And that separation that you just discussed, I think, is key, and that is the illusion that the body-mind are different. You know, it's bad enough that they've compartmentalized the body. It's much worse that they've attempted to divorce the body-mind from it. That's why, like Candace Pert's term, she combines the two, body-mind.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically addressing the limitations of matter, and I'll just throw this out because I think this is an important thing that we have to resolve before we get too deep. Many people use that terminology in an effort to explain why the clinical results that are being obtained are not meeting the expectation of the patient. But if you read what Stevenson wrote, principle number 24 really isn't, I think, getting to that. It says innate intelligence adapts forces and matter for the body as long as it can do so without breaking a universal law, or innate intelligence is limited by the limitations of matter. I think there's a difference between acknowledgement that there are physical, chemical, and biological laws through which living systems must work, and saying, well, you know, you don't have the best liver in the world, and that's why we're not able to help you, because that's the limitation of matter. I see those as two different issues.
Yeah, and the thing is that the first part of that statement, on the sort of the west side of that or, it sounds very much like a Bruce Lipton thing, where the environment is primary and the system has to adapt to the rules, basically, of that environment, which means that the way that the system can express itself, so like the menu is limited to the environment it's in. And then the second half of the statement, it says that, well, by the way, that the resources it has to do that with are also limited. So you have two constraints. One is the environmental forcing function on it, and then the resources, the physical resources it has to adapt it with. So, you know, like when you're dealing with just the average thing, like connective tissue problems, or lately everything has become soft tissue repair. It's like, do you ever run out of soft tissue? No, you have a cycle. These things have tissue kinetics that you could actually look at someone and say, hey, you know, it's going to take you 500 days to rebuild that soft tissue. But in the meantime, these are the things you need to do to support everything that's going to create healthy tissue, which includes all the usual suspects, like, you know, breathing, moving, all those things, that an organism that's adapting to its environment is going to do. So it seems like that principle, because it was written, and he wrote things in a very kind of cryptic way. The whole book is written very almost like a catechism. When you're time to get down to principle 24, you're in the minor principles. The major premises up top are giving you things that, you know, because you're doing it in a deductive way going down the ladder. Do you find that is sort of the big misconception about chiropractic, is that vitalistic and it's a deductive reasoning. So there's a sort of a right and left brain way of looking at it. The vitalistic way is, hey, you can go hair and a wooden leg, anything can happen, and, you know, alchemy, all that kind of stuff. And then if you get into this kind of nuts and bolts, no, there's actually, you know, there's a code here and you have to follow the code. That's why wet man, dry man, all the other things that are buried in that book that I wish was taught instead of the stuff we have to learn for national boards, you could look at a living system, as you call it, or human being, as something that's open to the influences of both the internal environment and the external environment, and then you can get out of the garbage of trying to divide it all up. So I'm not sure how that translates.
I think a lot of it has to do with the clinical disconnect between what you've just discussed and the focus of the patient. Unfortunately, we're told that in excess of 90% of individuals initially consulting a chiropractor do so for some musculoskeletal complaint. Yet the vitalistically oriented chiropractor is concerned about the totality of the human experience and basically expanding the individual's scope of adaptability so that they can experience more of life. And in going through that process, the symptomatic manifestation of the moment becomes subsumed.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a disconnect between what the patient thinks chiropractic is about, what the patient's expectations are, what the practitioner's expectations are, what the practitioner's clinical strategies are, and how to build that bridge and to see if there is a fit.
All right, well, rotating around the room here, now we're going to go
over the bridge, literally, to Connecticut. And Dr. George Muse has joined us here. So, George, you've been listening a little bit? You there, George?
Oh,
hello.
George.
He's
hello.
On, but I'm not talking.
Let's
all right.
Do it.
Yeah, he probably took that line you had the first time through. Well,
okay.
Oh, can you hear me? Oh, you there? This is actually, we're using like five different technologies tonight. Maybe two of them are working. So George has dipped out, so he has to call back in. But the rehab component in chiropractic is still pretty strong academically, and I just wonder if the student, the contemporary student of chiropractic, can handle all these mixed messages and go out and communicate to a public that's just looking for help. They don't really want to get involved in any of these debates. They're just looking for help. When you have to wade through the vitalistic layer, the deductive reasoning layer, the allopathic labeling part of it, and then the actual physical stuff that actually is what the person's experiencing, like you say, symptom to symptom, that little leapfrog they do, in order to get to the point where they're not using this as a Band-Aid, they're not using this as a quick fix, and they're using this as a behavior that healthy people do to stay healthy. I don't know how you connect all those dominoes together and make a profession actually function as a cohesive whole. I don't know if it's even, possible, but I guess George is back. Let's see if he's back.
I clicked
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're in. Did you hear anything before? All right, Dr. George Muse joining us from UB. We have Chris Ken. We have Robert Affalter in the room and all kinds of fun things going on. So,
hey, George.
Hey.
We're talking about limitations of matter, George, and just from your perspective,
yep.
The rehab component of chiropractic, do you think that's on an academic level? Is that still the primary message to teach spinal rehabilitative therapy or the rehab application in the field? And the philosophy is sort of something that's almost, on your own, learning if you want to. It's a business thing. It's a marketing thing. It's not integral to delivering the care?
To a degree, I guess it depends on what school you go to. I guess the focus on the rehab is the fact that thought process that it's not just about that the adjusting is amodality, that it's and that the soft tissue and everything else and the whole person must be addressed by working with them and not necessarily being their surrogate, but getting them involved more. And I think that in a way, if you look at that, I mean, I think that the rehab component lends itself quite easily to the vitalistic arena. I mean, I personally would consider myself more vitalistic than not, and I feel rehab is a very important part of care. I think that sometimes the academic gets tied up in being the academic, and I don't know if I know the vitalistic component is talked about, is discussed. I don't know if it's emphasized, at least, as much as I would like it to be emphasized myself. You got to figure there's only so much time, and you got a lot of material to cover. So I think that the educational process in itself and the governing of it and everything else has something to say about that. I don't think that – I think if you just do rehab for rehab's sake, I think that that's not quite what I got into this business for. But then, again, there's room within the business, I think, for people to do their own niche.
Well, that gets back to Chris's point that you have – basically you have a perception in the culture of what we're good for. Like he says, you say you're a chiropractor, people are on a reflex level, actually. They just start grabbing parts of them to hurt, they grab their back. And they think of us as sort of like, we're all-terrain vehicles. We're there to just basically poke them where they hurt kind of thing.
Well, there's two things I can say to that. Yeah. I mean, one is, did we do that to ourselves? And number two is when you sit there and you start looking at all the, what would you call it? Look at the people, especially here in the Northeast. The medical model is very strong here, and we're going up. We're basically coming up with a new point of view, or not in time wise. It's not like it's new like that, but we're coming up with something that these people do not in some ways equipped to handle. Every message they get on TV is telling them to take another drug. And we're saying, well, we can do without that. They're like, who are you? So I guess in some ways that there's still, I think there's a holdover of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But on the same token, it gets back to education. You got to educate them.
Well, let's get some riddles here. We'll go back to Bob Alfalter out there in chiropractic pristine West Coast, right? Where there's no allopathic
right.
No allopathic influence out there. Where they, I think the chiropractors are licensed to do enemas out there in your state, aren't they? Or is that Oregon? One of them.
No, that'd be Oregon. No, when I got here, we broadened a little bit, but mm-hmm. we can barely do any physical therapy here. It was only adjusting when I got here.
Yeah, delivering babies, I think that's Oregon, too. I don't know.
Yeah, that's Oregon. You have to know how to do stitches and the whole bit.
Yeah, right. So to get to some of the nuts and bolts of this here, I'm talking about limitations of matter for a reason, because people think of things, you put chiropractic, you know, kind of did a little, use a psychological term, a little word association there for Val. They think meat, they think body, they think physical. And my first question was, if you take the limitations of adaptation at its word, does chiropractic care, not just the physical adjustment, but does the entire care, the relationship with the doctor, everything else, the behavior, does that impact the person's free will? Does that impact the course of their life? And of course, anyone that's thinking lifetime care, you know, that's coming from the traditional model is saying, of course we do, but how do you prove something that's immaterial like that? Unless you change that chiropractic meaning of life to say that it's the expression of intelligence through the limitations of matter, through the physical stuff. And then, like I said, you start getting into this sort of almost kind of a, you know, quantum all the way down to there is no particles, and you know, you're back to stabbing at the wind here. So how do you communicate something that essentially immaterial about something that's very, very obvious, very physical? Their physical presence. They're focusing on their body. How do you get that message across, and have them apply a vitalistic approach to care, and actually have it impact the course of their life when they're pointing at what hurts?
Well, it's interesting because I just attended a family reunion this weekend,
mm-hmm.
and the subject actually came up, not about chiropractic, but, you know, my husband just had heart failure, you know, and now,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I was doing all the nutrition things right. What went wrong? And I just started talking about adaptation. And
mm-hmm.
this was with one of my cousins, and another cousin is right with me. Yeah, it's all about adaptation. Well, it turns out his field now is he's an electrical engineer. And we're talking about how the brain works. So it turns out he did his master's thesis on neural networks and writing a program that learns. And I said, gee, you know, you got to send me your thesis. But, and at the same time, I'm reading a book called The Intention Experiment by Lynn McTaggart that a medical doctor friend of mine gave me. And it's all about trying to prove through physics how Reiki heals. Is it electrical or is it magnetic? Or, you know, is it the quantum? Is it photons? And Lynn McTaggart's going through the physics of what's happening and trying to nail down, is it photoelectric, is it electromagnetic, what's really going on in the different experiments that are being done. And my son's now going down to start a doctorate at the University of California, San Diego, and I'm getting back and I'm telling him what I've been learning, and he says, well, UCSD's got a department of neurophysiology, or I'm sorry, neurophysics. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think we're looking at this all wrong. We should be going to the academics, but not at the academics at the chiropractic colleges. We need to go to the physicists and try to work with some of these people that are out on the edge of thought. We're working with the wrong group.
George and I have made it a personal quest to find some of these guys, turn over every rock. We, you know, down at Life College, I know Chris can testify to this, that there's a great Georgia State and Emory have great neurobiology departments. And I just, you know, I don't know if maybe Chris can answer this more than me. Does the old school sayings, like BJ's sayings, like what is mind never matter, what is matter never mind, is that stuff contemporized into some of these things that Bob's talking about, that we can actually say these things now without looking like, you know, the woos that they call us, and we actually have a legitimate ground to stand on?
Absolutely. In fact, what I found is that many of these theoreticians, or even those that are working in applied fields like neurophysics and the like, are very excited about clinical applications, because when they can see that there are practical clinical strategies to apply some of these principles that they're studying, it's great. But that's the key. It's communication. It's a matter of contemporizing the message, getting away from the 19th century cliches and Stevenson's, as you said, rather cryptic style, and the fact that these individuals didn't have the lexicon that's available to us today. You know, there's no talk of epigenetics. The word isn't there. You know, allostasis. The word isn't there. So again, if you can translate it, these people are fascinated. We just met with some people who are doing some functional MRI studies and who are looking at EEG activity, and they're fascinated with the notion that by applying chiropractic adjustments, we can affect a person's perception of the world and produce demonstrable physiologic changes in the brain. And again, it goes to what we said earlier. The body mind are one and the same. That, you know, there's this totality of the biological experience, and we compartmentalize it because it's convenient to study, it's convenient to communicate with, but we're missing the boat. But yeah, I agree completely. And when you get out of the chiropractic world and into the realm of academics, as long as you communicate on their level with their language, not only do they not think you're nuts, they think what we have is pretty cool.
Yeah, now George, you can kind of take this baton from Chris a little bit, because if we're going to go that direction, and I think that really is a viable way to go, are we going to have to actually talk outside of the chiropractic lexicon a little more and talk much more in terms of you know, things like, I don't know, brain development and maybe the nonlinear systems, the things that we've been talking about for about 10 years now, to understand this dynamic and not get bogged down in what tends to get really political really fast within chiropractic?
Well, you know my thought process and stuff.
Well,
tell the crowd. I haven't really looked much at the standard chiropractic stuff in a long time. I mean, I've been doing more with physics and frequency and, you know, neural networks and stuff like that. I mean, I've been reading more stuff in cybernetics you know, basically every other allied science I could get my hand on than I am looking at reading something on yet another back pain. The answer to the question is I'm 100% certain that where we need to go for reality's sake, if we want to be what we profess to be, which is vitalistic, you know, and whole mind body, you know, we need to look outside of the quote unquote medical parameters or conscript of the way that is set up. I mean, double-blind studies are fine, but they're just double-blind studies. That is a way of doing research. It's not the way of doing research.
Well, that's been one of Chris's anthems for about 10 years now.
If I could push my applause button, I would.
They made that the gold standard.
They can't use it. We can't use it. But why are we always sitting there making ourselves slaves to a system that is not what we are? But
well, we think that's where the cheese is. Who moved our cheese is what I'm trying to say.
You got a point.
This time last week, you know, we were talking with a psychologist that's talking about acceptance and commitment therapy, where you have to, the two bumper stickers are people suffer and happiness isn't normal. Get over it. and his... He's got 30 years of research going on out there to prove that. I mean, I can't believe it took 30 years to prove that. People suffer and happiness isn't normal. You can't basically do a research study to prove an ideal. And he's, you know, like, we're getting up right against it now, where you get past the body-mind stuff, which everyone kind of can accept at a certain point and say, okay, that's good. But when you start getting into the spiritual stuff, which is where we were talking about last week with therapy, where you're getting into abstractions, and you start going off to the, you know, the bleeps and the secret people, and now you're getting that quantum thing going, and here comes the, you know, I'm going to control all the red lights here on Post Road, with my will, when I can't even walk and chew gum. So it's almost like you have to keep the genie in the jar a little bit to make all these things work, because chiropractic for a long time, I mean a long time, maybe 70% of its history was very much at home with talking about the spiritual aspects of well-being. In fact, Fred Barge wrote, you know, two or three books about it that I still think about when I'm sitting there with a client, especially in this area, you know, we're still, you know, half a dozen years removed from 9/11, which was I was in the middle of that day, dealing with the aftermath of that, and I just wonder if chiropractic can actually make the complete circle to get past the physical, the limitations of matter on the physical side, understand that, yeah, these things do replace each other and there are cycles of, you know, things regenerating, and you get into the developmental stuff, and you talked about a little bit the brain, but then when you start getting into things like non-locality, which is some of the things that Bob was touching on with the neurophysics, where, you know, two systems interact and then they're not in the same part of the universe, but they have a connection going on. That happens like we saw with our buddy over there, Mr. Spatial Chaos there, talking about things in the brain that have non-locality. It also works within a larger sphere, within cultures, and then you get into things like mimetics. So there's so many unexplored connections that chiropractic can take this simple principle to and actually invite more support from the outside, because I don't think there's any support for it on the inside. I can't find any. Anybody? You guys see any support for advancing these things in that direction on the inside of chiropractic? George's working at UB. You know, Chris is connected all over the place within the profession. Do you see anybody sniffing around on the inside of chiropractic for that? Okay. Chris, no?
I'd say no.
No.
Wow.
It's too hard.
Yeah.
You've got to actually know something. You can't see. Part of the problem with this whole quantum thing is that people don't even know what a quanta is. That it's a small, discrete, indivisible unit. And that's all it is. It's not some magical thing. You know, they're running around, oh, quantum this and quantum that. They have no idea what they're talking about. You know? And the thing is it's a catchphrase, it's a meme and stuff like that for something that's a mathematical description of something. And the only way that you can truly get to understand what's going on behind this stuff is you have to immerse yourself in the discipline. I mean, I'm not saying you have to be an expert at it. You don't have to necessarily be a mathematician to understand, you know, the ramifications of quantum theory, but you should be able to be, you know, to understand what's going on. I mean,
so continuing ed in chiropractic,
second or third hand.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're running continuing ed in chiropractic, there should be, at some point, in order to advance the profession, you take the guys that are out 10, 15, 20 years, they're not thinking about anything except retirement. It's the ones that are out five or less that are trying to get into the profession, pay back their bills. If they want to be cutting edge, if they want to be innovative, if they want to actually be distinct again as a profession instead of extinct and sort of dead man walking, it's to apply these things. How do you operationalize things that you haven't even, like if you've taken all this training, you know, 40 months of chiropractic college, you've gone through the boards, and someone says, ha, 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 we've moved the line, now the goalposts are over here, and you have to go learn to speak five or six or seven other languages outside of the chiropractic language you learn, then, of course, the practice model you learn. I think what's happening is the locus in chiropractic has moved from the search for truth to the search for dollars and cents, both in the profession to keep the schools open and in the field to keep your practices open. And then you add in what's going on with the healthcare situation in this country where – I mean, the third-party stuff, I mean, Chris would know more than me, taking a broad view, the third-party reimbursement for chiropractic is essentially negligible, and if it is there, it's tedious to get it. So the profession's sort of been kind of cut off the leash. We're almost like running loose in the fields, almost like we were in the 50s, for God's sakes. And you have family practices and things like that, and that's about it. So how do you kind of herd all these cats together and get anyone to learn all these things when it's up to the individual doc to say, okay, I'm going to go this direction, and no one's ever helped me or George out in trying to find it. We've been the only chiropractor in the room to about every workshop, every conference we've been at for about 10, 12 years, and I haven't seen an increase in the profession of even, you know, trying to go intellectually into this. I just don't know how to, where's the stick? I know where the carrot is. Where's the stick to get us to do that? You know, I think maybe Bart is right.
It isn't this. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you have to find the type of person who's willing to go there, get the information, and bring it back, and then do something with it to package it for people.
Sort of a Marco Polo, eh?
They want a nice little package that they can expect you. And be honest with you, you can't sit there in 4 years tell people this kind of thing. I mean, it takes years of learning to grasp the outside of this envelope. I think that's interesting. I don't think people realize this.
Yeah.
A lot of education is also limited by the scope of the experience of the educators. I mean, and I'm not saying that in a bad way. Some of these people are very, very expert at what they do. But again, if you put a whole collection of people whose whole expertise is biomechanical components in one school, guess what the school becomes?
Well, I mean, the schools are underfunded. We've seen it. I mean, Chris and I have been down to Sherman, Life, all these other schools, and you just there's no bucks to pay the guys that we want. I mean there's an affiliation with the schools like Cal Irvine and schools like Florida Atlantic University, where our friend Larry is still roaming around somewhere, and Bob Blanks, people that are interested in doing these things that are more interdisciplinary. But I don't know how you get the emerging profession, you know, the new guys coming out of school and the public. It's almost like Horton hears a woo. How are you going to get anyone to pay attention that we've changed our stripe and we've sort of grown a brain? We can't seem to grow too many gonads in the profession, but can we grow a brain before it's all over? To make this not so much a clinical science, but more of a community science, that we can actually make sense of these things for people. Because I don't know about you, but I spend probably 70% of my case, an individual's case, trying to help them interpret things that other doctors, other professions have done to them. Why they do this test? What does this mean? How do I handle this news? They told me I had arthritis. It's like all these differential and, to me, just goofy diagnoses that come in. And, again, you're dealing with the same principle of the system's trying to adapt. What are you doing to support it? And mostly what people are functioning in is the fear of the symptom. I don't want it to get worse. It could be cancer. It could be this. So how do you get past all that pretty high fence to communicate these pretty lofty, innovative ideas when you have nobody's ear for a consistent amount of time, not the students, not the practitioners in the field, and definitely not the public? I'll toss it to Chris first, and we'll kind of go around the room here.
Okay, well, I'll just say, you know, there are two possibilities. One is to find people who are looking for that, but don't know that chiropractic is the place to get it. That's one possible pool. The other pool is the one that we have access to, and those are the people that are coming in with a preconceived, narrow, somewhat perverted notion of what chiropractic is, and try and build that bridge from them. You know, it can be something as simple as, well, you know, Mrs. Gefilte Fish, you're concerned about your low back pain. And, of course, we are as well. And what we're going to do is a very detailed examination. We're going to look at pressure pain thresholds, and we're going to see if we can find out what's causing that by next looking at how you're moving. We're going to look at ranges of motion. Then we're going to look at muscle function, because muscles are what cause you to move. Then we're going to look at the function of your nervous system, and we're going to look at the lifestyle factors that affect your ability to heal. Because, you know, I think you've been dealing with this long enough. In that 1 minute, you've at least showed them that there's much more to this than hitting the high spots and transient analgesia.
Yeah, I think, like I said, and from, you know, being in the field of it, and Bob, I'll toss it to you next. When you're dealing with a client that's in some type of a crisis like that, where they're suffering, people suffer. How do you use the philosophy at that point to communicate to them the thoughts that Chris was just saying, that it isn't just about this immediate? I use a very simple thing: this time, next time, meantime. I go, okay, this time, you're, this is what happened. And, you know, my job is to make sure that if this ever happens the next time, you've done something different in the meantime, so that they understand that it is inevitable that your body's going to go through these fits and starts, but you can actually learn from these experiences no different than you did learning, you know, the subjects in elementary school. This is elementary living is really what this is about. You know, they used to call it the rigorous life. I don't know if they still do that anywhere in Georgia, but whatever. But so how do you communicate that to a client, you know, knee to knee?
Well, I jump all the way to the end. I talk about intelligence right off the bat.
Okay.
Your body has to have the ability to adapt to its environment. And right now, if you were adapting properly, you'd get well. If you're stuck in some limitation, if you're not adapting properly, then what's wrong? And in order to adapt, you have to be, some part of you has got to be intelligent. And that part of you that's intelligent seems to use your nervous system as the primary means, not the only means, but the primary means to control and coordinate all functions of your body. So the bones of the spine actually house and protect the nervous system, and if they get out of alignment, they can cause pressure and increase or decrease the frequency of the firing of the nerves. And we've actually seen, scientists have actually taken the nerve and transplanted it from white meat to red meat or vice versa in a turkey embryo and actually changed the type of meat that forms. And if that can change, if that causes a change in adaptation due to the firing of the nerve, guess what's happening to your system if the nervous system's not working properly? So what we want to do is monitor your body, see if there's an adjustment that can be made, see if there's a subluxation that exists, clear it, and then find out what changes in your physiology. And those are the tests then that I run. So I run thermography, and I do reactive leg checks, you know, looking for a short leg. And then I communicate to them, okay, now you're adapting more properly. See how your thermography is more balanced? See how your legs are now more balanced? Reactive short legs don't show up. And tell them that they're actually changing their physiology and they're adapting better. So that's how I handle it.
Well, hey, good spiz, man. I mean, somewhere Fred is floating around the room with a big happy face on there. It's just, I just think that you're the exception rather than the rule in the field, because mostly in the field, it's, oh, what's wrong? Well, let me see what your coverage is. And it's like, and it becomes sort of, name that tone instead of name that tune. It's like, I could think I can get that tonified in 5 visits, you know. And instead of having, like, my protocol is completely embedded into the biological rhythms. I look at lunar cycles, I look at seasonal cycles, and I say, you know, everything you have is a seasonal affective disorder to me, because every time you go through a cycle of breathing, you're going right around all 4 corners of the universe to get the impulse, which is the thing we never talk about, the mental impulse, whatever. But the impulse is really what creates the vibrational part of it you're talking about that will then program the tissue to perform a certain way. It literally is like Lipton says, you know, who's hitting the keys on the keyboard, it's the environment. So, I wish we had a way to kind of take this discussion out to, you know, every layer of the profession, from, you know, administrative and all the organizations, to definitely the CE level. George deals with that all the time, to get very simple and, to me, very kind of, you know, neutral, not really charged concepts across, so that we can all basically start on the same foundation and build from there. And of course they're going to go off in different directions at a certain point, but it just seems like we don't have a foundation anymore to communicate that, what you just so eloquently said, that every client, everyone that comes across chiropractic should learn that in the first 30 seconds they encounter any part of the profession, whether it's to be a chiropractor, to get care, to teach chiropractors, especially the coming in from other fields. They have to know that orientation, that philosophy. Otherwise, the vitalism goes right out the door. It gets looked at as something that's from the last century or from the century before, and you're right back to the allopathic application of chiropractic technique. And I just think it leads to the dodo bird. It leads to basically the profession continually having to restart itself from these different islands out there in the academic world. And you've seen the political fractioning. I don't know who's even left in some of these different organizations. I haven't gone to a New York State education the meeting in about 5 years, because every time I went, it was all about, you know, insurance equality and workers' comp and nothing about talking to the public. So, you know, just to sum up, we'll go around the room one more time. Do you guys think that any of the stuff we talked about tonight is ready for prime time, that we can actually, you know, almost like, you know, create a little laundry list here that everyone should know about chiropractic from this perspective, that we could just kind of hit a couple of bullet points? Or just to sum up, I'll start with you, George. Just give me, like, you know, 30, 40 seconds on what you think we should do.
Well, one, just to put it in perspective, what Chris said as far as, doing the exam and, you know, working it up and taking it to the lifestyle and everything is exactly what's taught to the students.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's not like the students are not being taught that. I think in some ways, it's the reality of life may come in and beat it out of them. That's one possibility. But aside from that, getting back to the other aspect of what can we do about it, are we ready? No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think at this point in time that there's nobody in the field. There's not enough people in the field who are able to who are willing to look. I mean, I don't know how many people are really willing to look outside into these other fields. They always keep going back to medicine or to our own field and keep staying within the realm.
Well, let's throw it to Chris. Any signs of hope from around the fringes of the profession anywhere?
Yeah, I think I think the answer is inherent in the question. Yes, it's the so-called fringes of the profession. And unfortunately, I look at some of the individuals there who have developed vitalistic procedures, folks like Donald Epstein, folks like Ted Mortar, and so forth, and how they're actually looking outside the profession because they've sought to share their gifts and they've spat in their face, so to speak, their colleagues. So, yes, I do see hope around the fringes. I think that as third-party pay dries up, it's going to intensify the crisis, the financial crisis that already exists that begat the problem initially, and hopefully the culture will change. You know, the culture when I was a student 35-plus years ago was looking for improved strategies clinically to get better results. Technique seminars reigned supreme. There was a culture that permeated the entire institution. The basic science faculty in those days were all chiropractors who may or may not have had appropriate degrees to teach those basic science subjects, but they all had a way of inculcating vitalistic philosophy in every class. And I think a combination of rehabilitating the schools and being ready when the crisis hits, you know, hopefully when the Berlin Wall falls, we will be there.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll just send it over to the West Coast where there is no allopathic medicine, as we learned before, for Bob to sum it up for us. So how do you think we take the momentum of a conversation like this and kind of let, just like, you know, non-locally, little eyedropper in everybody's chiropractic universe out there? How can we get this message across in a very simple bumper sticker way to kind of, you know, kickstart that?
Well, I don't know about the bumper sticker way, but as you know, I've been saying for a long time we needed to legitimize this whole intelligent design movement.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to take it away from the Christian effort to teach creationism in the schools and get it back to the chiropractic principles. And it really is. It does dovetail quite nicely. And I want to give you, while I got a second, I want to give you an idea for another topic. We certainly, with a minute left, but another topic is, we were talking about the body-mind as being one, and I'm actually not in favor of that idea because I don't think it allows for free will, and I'd like to consider that as a topic for another show. Can you have free will if the body-mind is one thing?
I'd love to bat that around because I think that's a big-time thing. We get some shrinks on here. Maybe Professor Val has an opinion on that. She's been sitting on her perch since the dog barked about 9:05. So, well, with that, I'll let you guys, you know, pedal off into your individual non-local trajectories, and thank you for the tensegrity. Thank you for your time and your expertise, and hopefully this archive will hit the ears of some open minds out there in and outside the profession, and we can start doing this thing with a little bit more purpose and vitality, help some people out that are really looking, that people really are suffering, and I think people like us and people that know us have the answers to help them. So thanks for joining us here on Naked Soma, guys, and have a happy 4th of July.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Hi. Right.
Night, guys.
Night.
Yep.
They're all
ready. Yeah, we have a whole minute left.
Yeah.
I have nothing to say, though.
No, I don't. Well, I'm going to sum it up because I think this kind of sums up my entire day.
Please do.
Every now and then, I think you might like to hear something from us.
Nice.
That's
God.
Right.
A little
so next week, we're going to be talking about something completely different. Just check the site, Naked Soma, over here on the Blog Talk Radio, NakedSomaNation.com. But until then, I'm going to let Tina play us out here, and I'm going to go do exactly what this song is telling me. I'm going to go roll in the river now. You guys have a good 4th of July.
Mm-hmm. Bye, everybody.
Travel light.
Listen to the story now. Left up a job in the city, working for the man every night and day. And I never lost one minute of sleep, and I was worried about the way the thing might have been. The wheels keep on turning, oh, the power that keeps on burning. We're rolling, rolling, yeah, rolling on a good side of the city until I hit the ride on the riverboat queen.
So the
big wheel keep on turning.
Rolling,
rolling, yeah.
Rolling.